League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
When it comes to having a perfect week, I think it might be fair to say that Manchester City fell a little bit short of what was needed. A first ever defeat to Bournemouth, followed up by whatever that was in Lisbon, has left everybody a bit on edge right now. So here we are with this week's Blue Moon Podcast to hopefully calm everything down. Good bits, bad bits, silly bits, and ideally plenty of level heads coming up. We'll talk about those defeats to Bournemouth and Sporting, and also on the show, Adam Carter from statcity.co.uk is drilling into the numbers behind City's Premier League unbeaten runs. Yeah, I know, this week of all weeks, but I promise you there is a reason. We'll also hear from The Athletic's Andy Naylor, who can explain all about Brighton, and we've got some daft links between City and the previous US presidents coming up following this week's election stateside. Right, the quicker we get started, the quicker we're done, so let's get through it together. I'm David Mooney, and this week we have the soothing tones of City fan KC.
All right, mate.
And the embodiment of being cool as fuck, the Daily Mail's Jack Gordon.
Wow, look at that.
you've absolutely dobbed me in there with that one.
Why are you soothing tones? You're going to calm everybody down.
I'm a fuck, yeah.
Yeah, Jack, cool?
Well, yeah, if you say so, I love that. I've never been called cool as fuck before.
Really?
Yeah.
That does surprise me. You seem someone who's too cool for everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's just narky, isn't it, I think, rather than...
Yeah, I'd say you laid back more every time I've met you.
Yeah, okay. Oh, well, that's nice.
Well, laid back's all right, isn't it?
A lovely start.
Yeah. Well, I want to keep the good vibes going to start with, because obviously City have had a bad week, and we're going to get to that shortly. But before we launch into this next hour and a bit of negativity, I wanted a bit more positivity. So, just rather simply, KC, what's been good about your week?
Yeah, bollock all, really.
Good start.
Friday night went out to the produce hall with my wife and another couple, and we had a nice time. That's literally it. There's been nothing else that I can think of.
Excellent. So City have ruined an already bad week, is what you're saying?
Yeah. I've had stupid amounts of admin to do that I shouldn't necessarily have to do. So, yeah, it's just been all around underwhelming.
Excellent. Well, the good vibes then are all on you, Jack. What have you got for me? Good week.
Well, I've just come back from a round of golf, which wasn't great. Was stuck on the tarmac in Lisbon for 2.5 hours. Also not great. But as you may have seen from Twitter, as me and Sam were paying a bill in Lisbon for a meal, the waiter came up to us and pointed at Sam and went, Ruben Amorim, which is not a new joke, but to hear it in that setting was quite pleasing.
Yeah, I get that.
Quite surprising, wasn't expecting it.
Yeah. If you were hearing it from, like, you know, a generic Manc over here, but if you're hearing it in Portugal, I suppose it hits a bit different.
Yeah.
It was the way he delivered it as well. It's just like he knew he was on the cusp of bants.
Excellent. Well, when the Amorim news got announced, I sent Sam the Spider-Man meme, but three of them, and just said, when you bump into Ruben Amorim and Bruno Fernandes in Manchester, and I didn't get a response.
He didn't actually respond to my tweet either. I did tell him I was going to tweet it, and he sort of rolled his eyes a little bit.
I bet he's loving it, really, isn't he?
Shouldn't really be talking about rival podcasters on this show.
Well, I'm a rival to myself.
You have the monopoly on Man City podcast, don't you? So you are also a rival.
Yeah, there we are. We can put it off no longer, chaps. We're going to have to talk about the football. I think it's fair to say, KC, we've had better weeks. Why have City been so easy to play through recently, do you think? Because it's been a common theme. Bournemouth and Sporting found it quite easy to get through the middle of City.
Well, the simple answer would be Rodri, wouldn't it? But I suppose I think they just look tired from obviously the amount of injuries and the relatively small amount of players that have been there. They look mentally tired already. And I don't know whether that's just the amount of games catching up with them and the relatively short lack of pre-season for a lot of players. It just doesn't seem to be going particularly well at the moment, but I think we've had similar lulls before and got over them. So I'm not overly concerned at the moment, if you want a positive spin on it. Mm. I think we'll get it back, it just looks like one ball straight through the middle of the pitch is just catching us out every time at the moment. And I don't really know how you can legislate for that, because I'm probably not tactically aware enough to know what is going wrong. I suppose you just stand in the right areas would be the obvious solution, but it doesn't seem to be working at the moment.
Yeah, you'd think they would know where to stand as well, wouldn't you, by this stage of Guardiola's tutorage?
you would as well, but it's like even in the Sporting game, especially in the Sporting game, it was like, obviously I know that the first goal comes from Simpson Pusey, the young lad, sort of not being strong enough. But before that, for me, and it didn't seem to be, well, not that I seen, didn't seem to get talked about elsewhere, Akanji just seemed to go walkabout, just seemed to just wander off into an area where there was absolutely no danger that left a massive gaping hole for that through ball to go through. And that's, one of your more experienced and probably most level-headed players doing that. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on at the minute. It just seems completely bizarre.
Mm. Jack, there were periods in both games this week where City seemed to be in control, even if at Bournemouth they weren't creating much, but they were stopping Bournemouth from getting anywhere. The opening 35 minutes against Sporting was really good, apart from one break that Edison saved. And then all of a sudden, it's like it's just spiralled out of control in both games.
Yeah, they had a spell like this a few years ago where one sort of negative moment in a game would see them spiral, and they got out of that completely in the treble season and last season. They didn't have any of those sort of problems, but it does seem that when one thing goes against them, this sort of deck of cards sort of scenario at the moment, which does seem strange. But I mean, like Casey saying, look, Rodri's the obvious answer, but sometimes the obvious answer is the answer.
The strange thing about it, like you're mentioning there, because the spiralling thing, I completely forgot that we used to do that. But this year we've gone behind quite a lot and then come back fine. So I don't know what's changed recently.
No, I don't know. I've noticed in the centre midfield that Kovacic jumps from his position quite a lot, and I can't imagine that is an instruction. I've noticed it for a few goals this year where he's gone to press a ball in ahead of his sort of station, if you will, and then they've been turned around quite quickly, and it's left them a little bit open. Mm. But, I mean, the other thing is, you've got Lewis coming in from right back and filling in there, but Lewis is knackered. He's absolutely shattered, done in. And I think, people like him are getting hung out to dry a little bit at the moment because they're just not... I don't think they're fit. I don't think many of them are fully fit, to be honest. And I think... I said this in the summer when I got asked to do a piece on how City are always slow starters. And I said to my editors, I was like, well, they're not actually slow starters because they always win the first few games. August and the start of September is usually fine.
They're slow middlers, aren't they? Yeah,
yeah, but basically, I could be completely wrong, but what I think is that they come back, obviously they don't have a big pre-season together, they'll have like a week or two tops after an international window. And they come back and they sort of play on adrenaline for the first sort of 4, 5, 6 weeks because they're all back together. And then the sort of reality of three games a week hits in October, November, and they've not built up that sort of body of fitness that means they're capable of playing at a top level for three games a week. And then when you add in the fact that they've had loads of injuries, and it has been a lot of injuries and people missing, then you're relying on people that aren't able to do it for three games a week, and this is the this is a result of that, I think.
Mm. The mood after Sporting, KC, Bernardo called it dark in the post-match interview. Guardiola disagreed with him. And I'm wondering if that's kind of an emotional reaction to the way the game had gone, because they must have felt at half-time, how on earth have we gone in at 1-1 here? And so by the time you get to the end of the game and you've lost 4-1, you're kind of like, where's this gone wrong? And you can kind of see that they're doing all the right things. They certainly were in that first half doing all the right things. And then they've lost the game. And you can kind of see how that would really cloud the mind.
Yeah, because like the first like 35-40 minutes, obviously I know Jokeres went through on the one-on-one and should have scored before that. But it's probably arguably the best that we've played in a good long while. I think they just sort of they were taking the game for granted, I suppose, with how well it was going for that first 40 minutes. But yeah, it was just bizarre. But obviously, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, I did not watch any post-match interviews or anything like that. I immediately turned the telly off. So I'm surprised that if Bernardo's saying the mood was dark, what was Guardiola's reasoning for disagreeing with him?
Well, basically, that they were doing all the right things. They were like the performance was like in terms of that first half performance, it was actually fine.
No, but yeah, I mean, there's another element to that, though, isn't there? Like Guardiola's disagreeing with him because Guardiola's shtick is to shield the players from sort of criticism and negativity in public. So when they're playing badly or getting bad results, he will always say, "Well, they're doing the right things. We're playing the way I want to play. Just you know, other teams are better," which you know. Is fine, but doesn't give you a massively clear picture on what's going wrong because the manager is deflecting away from sort of, you know, well, he's even disagreeing with his own players, isn't he? So
yeah, I suppose what was really disappointing about that Sporting game was, like, I think even when we were playing really well at the start, like, they looked solid with the three at the back, but they had absolutely no midfield whatsoever. And it was just not putting our foot on the ball or anything. We just let them overrun us in the second half. It was really strange. Sorry to latch on to when you said about the spiralling thing before. I think we've just become a lot better at putting our foot on the ball and just controlling things and sort of getting the mindset right and slowing the game down and just making things seem a lot more calm. But we've just completely lost that now.
Hmm.
It just seemed really strange because to do that against a team that didn't really have a midfield to speak of, that was sort of what was worrying. Like I said at the start, I'm sure we'll get it back together, you know, with the injuries and you know, with the track record that we have, we always do get it back. But that was just a slightly concerning thing to do it against a team with no midfield, that we couldn't have the players there in the centre to sort of calm it down.
I thought there were two fundamental things on Tuesday night, aside from getting counter-attacked way too easily, which, you know, as you said, is a Rodri problem, whether people like it or not.
Yeah.
But the two things were, first half, yeah, they were great, but I don't think they created that many sort of gilt-edged chances that you would go, has to score there, should be 3-0 up. Like, they were good, but they weren't...
I can think of two immediately from Haaland that I thought he should have scored.
Yeah, but I think Sporting's defenders were generally good. Like, the three centre-halves were generally playing well against us, which was kind of combating those chances, if that makes sense. Like, you know, they're not a terrible side, I thought their three centre backs were performing really well against an onslaught. So that seemed to me why as many clear cut chances weren't coming.
Which two do you think he should have scored?
He had one they cut in on his left foot and the keeper pushed it away.
Okay,
and there was a volley. I think again on his left foot that got cut back to him.
Did he not do a volley with his right foot?
He lashed one wild with his right foot, but the left foot kind of came across to him, I think, from Nunes.
See, I think they've created like decent half chances in that first half. And, you know, on another night, they could have been 2 or 3 nil up, but I don't think they should have been. I don't think you're looking at it and going, they should be 3-0 up, they should have killed the game. So, and it feeds into what Silva... I mean... The most interesting thing about what Silva said after the match wasn't, well, aside from the sort of we're in a dark place, was him saying scoring goals is really, really hard at the moment.
Mm.
Like it feels like they're having to go above and beyond to score and it's got to be perfect. So that's an issue. And then I thought the second thing from Tuesday that was quite galling, really, was just not being able, just not being able to keep the ball properly.
Yeah.
And like final balls being stray in the final third. Like Gundogan was on for about 12 minutes and gave the ball away three times in decent positions, and they got turned over. But it was happening all the time. Like Lewis was doing it, Kovacic was doing it. And you go like, this is like basic stuff for City. And there's too many of them that aren't sort of anywhere near the sort of level that you would expect.
Well, it's like you were saying about Lewis being like, I don't think you would have said Lewis was one of those players last year, but not just in the sporting game, but the sporting game he was particularly bad at it. But he was giving the ball away all the time, I felt. And I don't know whether that's mental tiredness or physical tiredness or what.
Or both, yeah, yeah. They just to pick up on what you were saying there, Jack, in terms of like actually taking chances, I think the numbers speak for themselves, because you look at City's leading scorer list this season. Haaland's on 14. Then in second place is Foden, Gvardiol, Kovacic, Nunez, Stones, all on 3 goals. And like, if Haaland's not scoring, who is?
Yeah, I mean, you need... There's basically not anyone that's running up beyond Haaland. So Foden is only just coming back to sort of anywhere near his best, which is great because he's starting to come to the fore. And I thought, to be honest, on Tuesday, I thought he was brilliant. Mm. I thought he was the only one that came out with proper credit on Tuesday, Foden. But so with him coming back, you would expect more sort of goals from behind Haaland. But I've never seen, you know, like when Gundogan was getting 10, 15 a season, he'd be ghosting at the back post and he'd score those goals that looked easy but, you know, needed a timed run and things like that. There's no one running beyond Haaland at the moment. And then also you've got Savinho and Doku, who are both looking very lively and very dangerous but aren't contributing with those numbers.
Mm.
And I look at Savinho and you go, Savinho just needs one to go in off his knee and then he'll start flying. But he just needs to.
He's doing everything
to start.
Else, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And then as soon as that, and Casey's completely right, that there's no reason to sort of. I don't think there's a reason for massive panic. And I had to do on the back of Tuesday. Work said to me, was like, "Well, we need to know what's going wrong with City." And I said, "Well, it's relatively boring for, you know, everything we've just said for the last sort of 10, 15 minutes." And they said, "Well, that's fine. So they don't have to panic." I was like, probably not, no. But some of the issues are, you know, they're a bit eye-opening, aren't they?
Hmm.
It's been a confusing few weeks.
Yeah.
Because they had started the season really well, because they looked slick.
I'm always wary of doing the thing of going, well, you know, this has been a thing before, so it'll be a thing again. You look at last season, they had problems in the autumn time, they sorted it out, they won the title. Treble winning season, we didn't think they were going to put a run of wins together right up until they played Nottingham Forest in kind of like February, March time, and then they go on and win everything. The year before that, they had a difficult period again before Christmas, and then again sort it all out and win the title. So it's very easy to fall back on that and look at that and go, well, this is the sort of thing City do. I'm not panicking, but at the same time, this could be the season where the injuries and the squad problems just get too much, or somebody is just too good for them to be able to catch up like that. And then you look across the rest of the league, KC, and you look at Arsenal having similar problems that seems to be going under the radar a little bit. And Liverpool,
them. Arsenal fans never shut up moaning about it, do they?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I find it quite easy to avoid otherwise because I'm not focused on them. But you know what I mean. And then you look at Liverpool as well. The two title rivals haven't sorted themselves out this season, and that is ultimately it's a positive because it gives City a chance to work out whatever the hell's going wrong right now.
I think Liverpool have been very good, haven't they? Like, or am I missing something?
Should have lost to Brighton at the weekend.
Yeah, but they didn't, though, did they? I'm still like hopeful that it's the new manager bounce thing, and they will eventually, you know, I was going to say slip up then unintentionally when referring to Liverpool, but yeah, I think they look really good. I've not watched them loads. I've just watched them in the big games, and I think they've been a lot better than I expected them to be this season. Yeah, Arsenal are Arsenal, aren't they? That they'll, you know, I don't think that they've got enough in the tank to actually do it, and I'd be surprised if they ever do.
You just made me think there about the sort of to get over the line against Brighton, Liverpool, those two John Stones goals, the Arsenal equaliser and the winner at Wolves, I mean, you just look at it and you go, how important are those going to be in May?
I was going to say, if Liverpool are getting over the line, there have been times this season where City are doing it as well.
Exactly, yeah. That's what you got to do. Like, when you look at our Wolves game, you wouldn't necessarily think, oh, right, that's not going to count then later on down the season. If Liverpool are doing it, and then in the majority of games they're playing well, and they're getting results in games where they're not playing well, then that's a major concern, surely, isn't it?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
So going forward, Jack, we'll talk about the Brighton game a bit later on. But obviously City are kind of getting to the international break now. It's almost a case of like get there, reassess when everybody's back. What needs to change in the kind of the medium term? Is it they create better chances to put games out of sight? Is it ultimately finding a way to deal with those transitions? Or is that going to be something they just can't do when Rodri's not there?
No, it's none of those things. They need the players available. If they have the players available, then it changes the whole dynamic of everything. You know, Walker, who's going through a divorce, hasn't been available. Grealish hasn't been available, although he's called up to the England squad, so I'll, you know, leave people to draw their own conclusions on that. Foden's been unwell earlier in the season. You've got Nathan Ake's injured again, and doesn't sound a great one.
Stones and Diaz still out.
Stones and Diaz injured. I mean, Stones injured from nowhere. Diaz injured. I don't want to repeat myself, but you're like, maybe that performance from Akanji on Tuesday night is a product of having to sort of carry the defence for weeks on end. And you know, you talk about mental fatigue and things like that, and it seems silly to talk about mental fatigue in November, but it takes sort of many, many different forms that if you know there's not many players around you and you're going to have to go, you're going to have to play this game, that game, that game, it sort of weighs a bit heavy on you, I think. I don't think it's about like sort of transitions or anything like that. It's just they need to be able to have a bench where they've got 5 senior players that they can bring on at any given time, and he can rotate and pick who he thinks is the best team to win whichever game.
Yeah. I want to finish the first part, Casey, with a little bit of a positive spin, because I do think it's possible. 3 defeats in a row, not ideal, but 3 different competitions. So you're kind of taking the stress of the 3 defeats in 3 different places. Okay, they're out of the League Cup, but like, there's plenty of time in both the Premier League and the Champions League to make up for where they've gone wrong there. Obviously, the first 35 minutes against Sporting, as we talked about, was good. The injured players will be coming back on the horizon. Like it's very easy to catastrophize and focus in on this last kind of week and a half or so. But actually, when you pull out and look at the bigger picture, it's not the worst thing in the world. There is light at the end of the tunnel there.
Oh yeah, there definitely is. I still think we're good enough to. Is it the top 8 you need to qualify for the Champions League to get through without the extra games?
Yeah.
Because I think the extra games, that's just the key thing that you really want to ignore, isn't it? avoid, sorry, not ignore.
Yeah, definitely. You could ignore them, but I guess you'd end up in a situation where you probably, like, if Guardiola didn't turn up or something like that, then you'd go, well, what's going on with City here?
Yeah.
To be fair, I've ignored them because when I was totting up how many games they could play this year, I didn't even factor those in.
Yeah,
because I want to finish in the top eight.
Yeah, got to do that, haven't they? That is imperative in the end.
Potentially more time standing on the tarmac for you, Jack.
I know, yeah. It's like the smallest violin ever, that, isn't it? Oh, yeah. I've been paid to go to Lisbon for a couple of days, and so, I've got to wait for it to take off. So, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
No wonder people hate us.
Well, while you stew on that thought that you might be having to sit in some sunny climes for a little bit longer, let's move on. And Saturday was the first time that Bournemouth have ever beaten City. It means that City now have only two unbeaten Premier League records left. As you'd expect, it's Adam Carter from statcity.co.uk who has the numbers.
The thing about unbeaten records is that they are always going to come to an end. Pep Guardiola put it best back in 2020, when it looked like Liverpool might break City's 100-point record from the year before.
The records always are there to be broken. So we break it when someone could not think we could be broken before. So sooner or later it's going to happen this season and the future. The history speaks clearly about that.
So at some point, Bournemouth were always going to beat City. Before Saturday, they had the longest run of Premier League meetings against City without winning. Now it's Watford that has that honour. Here's the selection of their beaten managers.
If we were going to have any hope at all of making the work a bit harder for their victory, it would have to be keeping the clean sheet for a period of time in the first half.
It's difficult to defend against this man. Eh? We know we are playing against a team who won the Premier League.
If you say you want to play against Manchester City and you want to make many mistakes, of course, it will be very tough.
After conceding the first goal, there were some moments when we weren't so focused that after it was impossible to have the option to get any points.
City deserve really the 3 points. They are strong enough to come here to create a lot of problems to us, to win the match.
Watford have tried and failed to beat City 14 times in the Premier League. Following close behind them with 12 attempts is Sheffield United. Here's their last three beaten managers.
It's incredibly difficult, you know, even for the top teams to come here. They counter-press better than anybody. If they lose it, and when they do, it's the very odd occasion, they get it back pretty quickly.
Reiterate what I said before, you need a perfect performance to beat them. That wasn't a below-par City performance, it was... Yeah, we got punished for the two things we should do better.
Another disappointment, you know, Joey Barton getting sent off the game before, so I should have missed ours, and the Premier League saying they don't sit over Christmas. Scandalous, really. And I thought he was instrumental in keeping them going when we were really on top.
There are seven other teams that have never beaten City in the Premier League, and it may be a while before some of them get another chance. Derby, Huddersfield and Oldham have tried and failed four times, while Blackpool, Bradford, Luton and Swindon have all had two unsuccessful attempts. We know it took Bournemouth 15 tries to get their first victory. As yet, no team has taken longer. For their first Premier League wins over City, Southampton needed 10 games, Brighton needed 8, Fulham 7 and QPR and Liverpool both needed 6. Now, what about the other way round? You'll be pleased to know that there are no teams that are unbeaten against City. But which teams did it take City the longest to get their first Premier League win against?
We had Arsenal on the Saturday, so we're thinking, well, we've had 1 point in that two games, it's not great, and we've got Arsenal on Saturday, and we won 1-0.
That's Nicky Weaver, speaking to the podcast about the start of the 2006-07 season. He played in City's first ever win over Arsenal in the Premier League, and that 1-0 victory that August was the 19th time the sides had met in the competition. That's the longest it's ever taken City to beat a team in the Premier League.
I remember making a couple of saves, Thierry Henry come through one-on-one a couple of times. In the end, Joey Barton scored a penalty. So that was a great result. We had a good start to that season. We started particularly at home.
It might surprise you to hear, or actually it might not, that it took City a long time to beat Middlesbrough in the Premier League. That was also in the 2006-07 season. This one at the 15th attempt. Dom Farrell and David Mooney laughed about City's dreadful record against Borough on a City Heaven, City Hell episode recently.
City went, like, I think it was 13 years without a derby victory, and had a terrible record against Arsenal. There's the well-documented problems at Anfield they've had in this century. But overall, they tend to beat everybody now, apart from, you know, Tottenham and Crystal Palace. That's a recent thing. But genuinely, in all history, whatever era of City against Middlesbrough, the record is, like, comedically awful. I mean, as you say, I didn't pick this one for my heaven, but I did think long and hard about picking the David James game, because a goalie up front is so funny. Then why shouldn't that be your heaven? But obviously that was a game where City missed a penalty to not qualify for Europe in heartbreaking circumstances. The fact that I had that near the top of the list, I think probably tells you all you need to know.
Yeah.
And as Dom mentioned there, it also took City a long time to get one over United. Their first win in a Premier League derby was the final one at Main Road, and it was their 11th attempt. Sean Gota scored two of City's three that afternoon. He spoke about those goals on a very noisy podcast years ago.
The goals, I thought, were good goals, because I think one over Barthez was a World Cup winning goalkeeper, so took a lot of joy in that. And the City fans, obviously, the girl they love, but I think I've equally come to love as much, is the one that Neville fed me, and it was a great ball by him as well.
United, Middlesbrough and Arsenal are the only teams it took City more than 10 attempts to beat in the Premier League. The vast majority of teams were dispatched within the first two games, with only Wigan on 8, Liverpool on 6 and Charlton, Crystal Palace and Spurs all on 5, giving City a tricky time. These days, City don't tend to have too many long sequences without a win against one particular team. It seems unlikely that anyone will get close to Arsenal's 19 unbeaten against City ever again.
Hi, this is Gary Cook, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Adam Carter looking at City's unbeaten runs. Time to look ahead to the game with Brighton now. And we've talked about three defeats in a row. The alarm bell's ringing for a potential four in a row, because Brighton are very, very dangerous to this. Jack, I guess normally with City and Guardiola, we'd look at the performance as well. But like, this is almost one of those where they've just got to win somehow.
Yeah, they've just got to get through it any way they can, really. I really don't know how it's going to go Saturday, because you've got a situation whereby you don't actually know. We're recording this Thursday afternoon. You don't know who's available, whether they've picked up extra bits and bobs in midweek and things like that. So, the main thing I'm worried about is that you don't want to, from a work perspective, you don't want to be the guy that's sat in front of Pep every time they lose, asking him about them losing. You don't want to be that guy. So. Purely selfishly, I hope they win Saturday.
God, that violin's getting smaller and smaller, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, hey, mate, he's been very, very difficult to talk to the last few weeks. It's been heavy going. You know, it's like...
Yeah, he is a bit of a moody sod at times, isn't he?
Well, he's... You know what? People always say he's very difficult and sort of not quotable. I always find with the newspapers he's absolutely brilliant. Like, whenever he goes, I'm going to... really miss him, because he's great with the papers normally, but the last few weeks it's been, you know, you want to know things, and it's like what I was saying before about him shielding the players, like he doesn't really want to get involved in what's going wrong, and he doesn't really want to get involved with player absences, because, you know, there might be other things going on or whatever, and it's just made it a little bit frosty and quite difficult to sort of negotiate. So maybe the international break's come at a good time for everybody.
Yeah. If they can get a win on Saturday, though, that'll change. So, yeah, fingers crossed for you there, Mike, for not just the City fans wanting to see an end to this run, but so that you can have a nice chat with him afterwards. KC, if controlling transitions has been a big issue this season, and Brighton obviously will play quite open and quite on the front foot, is there an argument here to fight fire with fire? Because City still, as much as we talked about the lack of goals from elsewhere, City do still have firepower there. They have to control what Brighton are going to try and do. But if it's open, attack that space.
I think, yeah, it's just easier said than done when you're in a bit of a rut, though, isn't it? I think we're going to win on Saturday, despite the poor, you know, the poor form and the results. I think if we do what we did in the first half against Sporting, I think we'll be fine. So, like, just carry on and do what we did there. Is that too simple an answer? I don't know.
Well, I'm just worried that there were two moments in that first half where Sporting got clean through.
Yeah, I just don't think there's anything that we can particularly do about that at the minute. And I suppose as well, you know, they've got, you know, if Brighton do play Ferguson, let's say, that's a similar kind of striker that can just run through like that as well. But I don't know whether it's just a melancholia that's come over me because of the results, but I just can't see what they do differently at the minute, or if there is a, there's nothing at the minute with the performances that you can just put your finger on and say that is the issue. Mm. You know, like in previous seasons, you've gone, oh, we just need somebody up top to put it in the net, or we need this, or we need that. But you can't clone Rodri, can you? So there isn't an easy, you know, there isn't something that you can just put your finger on at the minute. You know, because.
It all comes back to fitness again, though, doesn't it? That's the thing. They need the players there.
Yeah, I just don't really know what we can say more without going over the ground that we've done, unfortunately. But yeah, I remain positive, and I think we'll win at the weekend.
Yeah,
I think just sort of to add on to that, I think there's been maybe a bit of a wider problem with the signings they've made over the last couple of years, where they've got. This sort of point of view that they refuse to overspend for players. So apart from Grealish and Gvardiol, they've not gone out and spent like mega, mega money for a while. And Grealish, obviously, they were going to make quite a lot of that money back anyway from different avenues from a marketing perspective. And Gvardiol is
amazing.
He's the best young defender in Europe, isn't he? So and they knew that at the time. So pay the money, fine.
Was Nunes 50? That feels like a lot of money for what they've had out of
him. No,
I thought it was more than that.
It's 53. It was the right. But my, and also he's a George Mendes client, and Mendes is tight with the club and things like that. So my point was that they will happily go and spend 40 on Calvin Phillips, 53 on Nunez, 30 on Kovacic, but won't go and spend 85 on someone else. And I just wouldn't sort of, you can't really criticise the recruitment, because over Pep's time it's been by and large really, really good. But I just wonder whether there was a moment in the last few years where they could have gone, right, we're going to buy one player for £85 million instead of buying two players for 90.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with you completely.
And I wondered whether... Now, I didn't think Declan Rice was the right player for them when they were in for him, or when they had a sort of flirted with the idea. But... And they were willing to go to... I think they were willing to go to about 90 for him. But there must have been someone else in the sort of like 6 or 8 bracket that they've gone, yeah, he's going to be worth it, let's do it. And they've chosen not to, which has seen some of the players, you know, obviously everyone ages, but like some of the others have got slightly older. So you've got like De Bruyne, Silva's, you know, not a young whippersnapper that he was. Gundogan's then come back, and it's just like the age of the midfield just creeped up slightly without anyone really noticing, and then that sort of feeds into the sort of transitions issues. So I think, yeah, it's just, don't know, it's a difficult one. But well,
the age thing, he threw Simpson Pussy in from the start in Lisbon, and like that doesn't feel like a very Guardiola thing to have done, barring like if there was any potential for any senior centre back to have been in that position, he wouldn't have done it. Like is that an option for him for this season? I mean, you look at, you want, you know, a bit of youth and a bit of legs in there. Can McAtee come in?
Yeah, well, I would have liked to have seen McAtee play significantly more than he has done. I remember speaking to McAtee in America in pre-season, where I didn't get stuck on a tarmac. During that tour, it was It's a good airport run. But he was saying that he'd done 2 years at Sheffield United and this year wasn't about minutes. Like, he'd wanted to play, but now is about like trying to fight his way into the City squad, and minutes weren't the biggest draw for him. He just wanted his chance to shine. But I just wonder whether he would have expected, particularly given the injuries and everything we've spoken about, that he would have actually been given a little bit more of an opportunity to go and express himself. Because I thought on last Wednesday at Spurs, he had moments where you go, he's got something a bit different. Like, he's found a pass there, or he's opened the game up slightly. I didn't think it was his best game by any stretch, but he just got that sort of, little difference to the others. And you sort of look at O'Reilly, and O'Reilly's got a difference to the others as well. He's big, strong, he's a really good runner, carries the ball well. And you go, well, if they're going to be around the squad and they're in this sort of situation, or have been in the situation that they've been in the last few weeks, is there a chance for them to play? Not play together like they did at Spurs, because then you don't want two young players playing like that. And the Spurs game, they kind of like went, well, whatever happens, we're not too bothered.
A bit inexperienced, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, well, one of them could go and do a job because they've got people around them. And I would have liked to have seen that. It's been a bit of a shame.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's like, I've spoken about this before, but like, it's the combination of, like that sort of, I hate to say it about like, the likes of Kovacic, etc. Your 30 million plus players. But I was going to say middle of the road, but that sort of not quite top level. It's just the frustration of changing them when in the past he has had the option of a Lavia or a Palmer, and he's doing similar. Like, I don't think McAtee is anywhere near the level of a Palmer, I'm not saying that, but he's had the opportunity to use them more in the past, and he frustratingly hasn't done. And you think, like David said there, he was forced into using Simpson Pusey there. So you just think, I would love to see McAtee get a shot, if just for, let's see what he can do. If he's on the bench, we're not really seeing much of it, are we?
No, and the other thing is that McAtee's best position is middle of the pitch, and Sam said to me the other day, he was like, well, look at Foden. Foden's only just come into the middle of the pitch the last couple of years, and he's been playing for them for years and years and years. He like doesn't trust people in that area. So you go, well, where is McAtee actually going to find his little niche and find his spot where he's going to be able to go and say, like, yeah, I'm good enough? Because the first opportunity is not there. There's a roadblock where he can't be. He can't play in those little pockets because it's a trust thing. So how do you, where do you go from there? And you're talking about Palmer, like, the season before he'd left, if Palmer had been given his opportunities on the right wing instead of the left wing, then I think Palmer would still be a City player, to be honest.
Mm. Yeah. Right, well, let's get a view on Brighton. I've been speaking to The Athletic's Andy Naylor to find out about their start to the season.
Yeah, I think it has been a good start, bearing in mind Fabian Hertzler, new head coach, 31-year-old German. So he's integrating a lot of new players. They signed 9 players at a total cost of nearly £200 million in the summer, which is a big spend by Brighton standards. So you're integrating new players as well. They have had an awful lot of injuries in the first part of the season. I know City have had their fair share of injury problems, but Brighton have had a lot of key players out. And they have had what looked, when the fixtures came out in June, like a horror start. By the time they've played City, that will be 7 of the top 8 in the table from last season. So all things considered, as you said, 8th in the table, 16 points. Pretty good, I'd say.
Yeah, how's the performances been under Hertzler? The one thing we can say about Brighton for certainly the last few head coaches is that Guardiola's been very much an admirer of the way that they play. Is Hertzler carrying that on?
Yes, he is. Yes, slight tweaks, slight differences to what came before under De Zerbi. They're not quite as sort of precise about the way they build up out of defence, but they still do play out from the back. So you've seen similarities there, but they're looking in a good place in terms of most of the performances. Having said that, I think what's interesting and what's encouraging, if you like, is that in the game so far, that it's hard to think of a sort of 90-minute performances. They've had really good periods and really good halves in games. Liverpool on Saturday at Anfield was a great example. They played really well in the first half, were 1-0 up, and really that's where they lost the game, because they should have been 2 or 3 up. They should have got more reward for their dominance. You always knew there would be a comeback from Liverpool kicking towards the Kop, and they ended up losing 2-1. Not that they played particularly badly second half, but like I said, they haven't really had, they've had spells in matches, and some of the results you can look back on and think they're a bit fortunate in some aspects to get the results they have. In other games, particularly home draws against Wolves and Ipswich and Nottingham Forest, they really should have got more than they have. So I think the encouraging thing is they're doing well, but there is quite a lot of scope for improvement as well.
Yeah, in terms of style of play as well, it's been, Brighton have been a thorn in Guardiola's side in recent years, certainly with the way that they are able to defend the spaces that City want to try and exploit. How are Brighton doing in transition this season? Because we've seen transitions have really caused City problems this year. Is that something that Hertzler will look to exploit?
Yes, they press with intensity. They try to press high. There has been quite a lot, a narrative about the fact that they defend a high line, which has been looked a little bit vulnerable at times. And their defensive record by Brighton standards has not been great. They're sort of regularly conceding 2 goals a game, which is quite a big ask. I think one of the interesting aspects of the tweaks that Hertzler's made at St. Pauli, who he sort of guided to the title, in Bundesliga 2 last season, he more often than not played with a back five, you know, 3 centre-backs and wing-backs. He hasn't done that at Brighton so far. He's played a flat back four almost entirely so far. Part of the reason for that is to get as many attacking players on the pitch as he can, because they have got a lot of good attacking options. So what we've seen so far is that they're conceding more goals than they normally do, but they're also scoring more goals as well.
Yeah. Who are the informed players at the moment?
Well, Danny Welbeck is in the form of his career. You know, he's scored 6 goals in the league so far. So he's not far off. He's never been a prolific goal scorer in his career, Danny. So he's never actually reached double figures in terms of the Premier League for a season. So he's well on course to eclipse that. And I think one of the significant things there is that the record signing in the summer, Jorginho Rutter, 40 million from Leeds, he is an assister. That is his biggest strength. And he has set up Danny's last 3 goals. So that's a combination to look out for at the moment, because João Pedro, who was the top scorer last season, Brazilian, 30 million from Watford. He's been out recently with an ankle injury sustained against Nottingham Forest. I'm not sure whether he'll be back for the City game.
Yeah. In terms of kind of how City play and how City are very much trying to kind of stop the flow of the game when the opposition want to build up as well as try and build up themselves. How do you see this one going? Because we've seen City in the last few weeks have to face teams that have sat deep. I don't expect Brighton will sit deep and kind of play a defensive game in that sense. Is there a chance this is a really open game?
I think there is a chance, yeah. I don't think we'll see Brighton sit deep by any means, as you've suggested. Most games, as I've sort of said, with the exception of they did win 1-0 at Newcastle. So they managed to keep a clean sheet at Newcastle, although, to be fair, they were battered really for half an hour until going scoring and then improve from there. I would be very surprised if there are not goals in this game. And I'm talking about goals at both ends of the pitch.
Yeah, for sure. You've mentioned the high line already and the defence with Brighton. How have they been trying to restrict opposition chances? Because City this season seem to be, they don't seem to be creating an awful lot, let's say.
Yeah, well, as I sort of indicated, that's been a bit of an issue for Brighton in terms of defensive cohesion. In fairness, they've been so disrupted by the injuries in that respect. I think, you know, that is probably a department where you want a bit of continuity, players having good relationships in that back four. Lewis Dunk, the captain, he's been out recently. Jean-Paul Van Heck, who has come on leaps and bounds, Dutch international now, he's been injured. Adam Webster's been out. So they've had different combinations all the time in the central defence and also in the full-back positions. It's been a very unsettled back four, apart from at the start of the season. And perhaps that's significant because at the start, when they weren't conceding goals, they had a settled back four.
Yeah. We've got a charity bet coming up a bit later on in the show, Andy. When we have guests on, I like to give my prediction over to the guests. What will you go for? What's your score prediction? How do you think this game will go?
Well, I've said goals, haven't I? Obviously, City is always a tall order. It's the one team where Brighton have never got a result at the Etihad. They've basically got results against everyone now in the Premier League. Not at the Etihad, but they have, of course, beaten City at the Amex Stadium a couple of seasons ago. I've said there'd be goals. I'll go 2-2.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
That was Andy Naylor talking to me about Brighton's start to the season. KC, do you think, we're looking at other options in the pitch for this game. De Bruyne came on towards the end of the Sporting game. I'd be surprised again if he starts, given how long he's been out. But they're missing his link-up with Haaland. Do you find what's happened recently with De Bruyne a little bit odd? Just in the sense that he was on the bench at Bournemouth, he was never coming off that bench at Bournemouth because his coat never came off and he was like slumped in the chair throughout. Guardiola did the whole thing after the Spurs game where he spoke about, you know, players coming back from injury and wanting to see some more from certain particular players. There's the school of thought it could have been aimed at De Bruyne, and then he comes on for the kind of final few minutes in Sporting and kind of, I don't know, get a few minutes here and then see what you're up to.
Yeah, well, I think the thing with De Bruyne is because he's had that many injuries, like he's had so many injuries over the years, I think you have to trust him to know his own body at this stage. You know, it's not just like, oh, this one's coming out of the blue, and you know, if that pointed comment was aimed at him, it's a case of, oh, you know, he's a bit shy. He's never been shy about coming back early before, has he? You know, he's definitely come back too soon previously and it's backfired on us, hasn't it? And he's just ended up getting injured again.
He ran his body into the treble in the treble season. He ran his body into the ground.
Yeah, so, like, as I say, I'm not 100% convinced it was about him, but if it was, I think you just have to go, well, he's earned the right to know his own body at this stage of his career. Mm. And just, you know, there's nobody in the world that doesn't know what Kevin De Bruyne can do. So yeah, I just think you just need to let him trust himself, and if he tells you when he's fit, then I'd go off what he knows, because he's done it so many times before where he's come back too soon, rushed back by the club, and it's just backfired on him.
Yeah. Jack, is there something missing? Like, even as creative as Bernardo and Foden can be, when they're the ones that are behind...
It's not the same, is it?
When they're behind Haaland, it's not the same, is it?
No, it just isn't. Like, he sees a picture that no one else sees, and, you know, it's... he's a massive miss when he's not there. And it, like, look at last season when he came back from the injury. He actually, his performances weren't brilliant, but he'd always have a moment in a game. Like, he had the run of like loads of assists, didn't he? Whereas, like, at one point you went, bloody hell, he's gonna get like 10 or 12 assists here by the end of the season.
He'd have a terrible game, but still pop up with a goal and two assists.
And you know, you look at the last three games, and you go, well, if De Bruyne is in that team not playing brilliantly, he'll always do something, and he'll wang across to the back post, and Haaland will just like stretch a leg at it. It'll go in, and suddenly you're 2-2, and it's like, right, the game's on here. But they don't, you know, the other players give them very different things, don't they? And De Bruyne has got an X factor that no one else has, so they're obviously going to miss him. But it's like, you can't blame him for if he's been withholding himself slightly. You can't blame him, because you just think at his age, with his injury history, the next one could be it. That could be curtains for him. And so it's like what we said about the mental side of it before. It's like, it's exactly that, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose the frustrating thing about it is, you know, we've always known his history, and we know how old he is now. And you think, if this is going to be his last season, which obviously there was rumours swirling about in the summer that this is going to be his last year, it's just like, it goes back to the recruitment. Why didn't we take the opportunity to potentially get his replacement in to have a year playing with him?
Because the problem is, so if they went to go and sign Florian Wirtz, for example... And that's a £100 million player in it. So if they go get him, they can only justifiably spend that money once De Bruyne is out of the way. Because you can't spend, for someone that good, you can't spend the money and go, right, well, you're going to be the next guy in line. First season's going to be a bit in and out. They're going to want to play. And I think that, I probably didn't articulate it properly before when I was talking about the central midfield. Because I'm going back a few years here, but like in previous years when Gundogan and Silva and Foden have all been that good, what are you going to do? Are you going to spend 80, 90 million quid on someone who's better, who's going to dislodge one of them? But you don't really want them dislodged, do you? Or do you go and get someone who can supplement them and not play as much? And then you've still got your amazing team, but you've got someone behind them who can like fill in or whatever. And that is the issue that they've had.
That's the Rodri issue as well, though, isn't it? They don't get a Rodri replacement for when he's injured, because what are they going to do when he's not injured?
Exactly. So, and that's why I thought Rice wasn't the right player for them. But then all of these sort of factors have... And this isn't, you know, it's not a response to them losing three games on the trot. This is... You know, I think something a few of us have been thinking about for a while, that just the makeup of the squad, there's something just missing, I think, this year.
Yeah.
But it's not to say that they won't go and win another title and get another FA Cup or whatever. It can be done. It just might be a little bit harder.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Saturday is going to be hard, come what may. Nobody won on the podcast on the charity bet recently, so we're still on £595 raised for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. William Hill is giving us each a £10 correct score single on City's games. We've heard from Andy, he's gone from a 2-2 draw. That's 14-1 and £140 if he's right. Jack, what are you having for this?
1-1.
One all, which I will bite your hand off for right now, I'm not going to lie. 15-2 is £75. KC, what are you having?
Well, you've talked me out of doing my normal 6-1.
Yeah, they're not winning 6-1, mate, so it's a good idea.
Yeah, well, you know, as loath as I am to move it, the last time you made me move it, I did actually win
So I've gone 1-0 to City this weekend.
1-0 City is 9-1 and £90 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and check out begambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. Now, the US election has obviously been dominating the news this week, and it got me thinking about connections between US presidents and Manchester City. Go with it. I've talked them through with Joey and Mulve from the Noisy Neighbours podcast, starting with the second US president, John Adams.
It's a famous family. You've got John Adams, John Quincy Adams, Sam Adams, I think, was related to them. But yeah, those, the founding fathers were very important. They forced a tyrannical English government off of this land.
Someone should write a musical about that.
Mm, yeah.
So that takes us to Adams Park and Wycombe Wanderers. City have played there twice, lost one, drawn one. Mulve, I was kind of hoping that when you said that you'd emigrated to the US, that you'd emigrated after the point at which City have played at Adams Park. But when you went, they never played there, so you didn't even have the chance to go.
No, I didn't. And I must pull you up, Moons, because you've glossed over one connection already, and that's the very first president.
Oh God, what have I done here?
George Weah-Shington.
Oh, yeah, of course. How could I forget?
Yeah. Get out.
Okay, well, I'm worried now that there's, because the next one I've got is president number 7. So we're going to Andrew Jackson. There are 3 Jacksons I can find that have played for City. Bert Jackson, great names. No, so sadly not Tito. Bert Jackson, great name. Perfect for a City player. Mm. Harry Jackson, Gary Jackson. The
twins.
No, sadly not. One of them is quite considerably older than the other.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Medical miracle.
Yeah, maybe. Gary Jackson, I think, is the only one that listeners have got any chance of having seen, given that the others played for City in 1909 and 1946. So, like Andrew Jackson, like, is he memorable at all for Americans? when we have a quiz show here called Pointless, where you have to name things that other people can't name, like reverse family fortunes. Would Andrew Jackson be a pointless answer for American presidents?
I'm trying to remember. Wasn't Andrew Jackson the Trail of Tears guys?
Well, he's on some currency, is he not? Is he not on the 50?
I think he is, but I also think he was involved in the Trail of Tears.
What's that?
The Indian Removal Act was they basically forced a lot of Native Americans out of kind of the southeast, like Florida, southern Georgia, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was called the Trail of Tears because the, they forced these Native Americans to kind of walk off of their land. So, he'd be, that's a memorable thing.
And he's on your currency.
I believe he is.
I think he's on something, but I don't know. There's probably other presidents that are on currency that maybe if reporting was a little bit better a long time ago, would probably know some stuff.
Yeah. Let's move to president number 9, William Henry Harrison. Mulve's Jack Harrison, but not that one, because that one that everybody knows never actually played for City's first team. The one I'm talking about played for City's first team twice in 1929-30 and scored once. There you go.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to say to that, Moves.
Well, there's the Jack Harrison that everyone knows that I think moved to Leeds.
Oh, of course. Yeah, but he's got a Man United heritage, I believe. So
drafted by New York City, wasn't he?
Oh, he was.
He was. Absolutely played for New York City. Yeah. Played well for them.
Yeah, he went to college here, I think, and then got drafted by them.
Excellent. Yeah, no, I completely wiped that from my memory. William Henry Harrison and also Benjamin Harrison. We're going to you've had presidents there that have the same surname. So that's presidents number 9 and 23. So we won't come back to Harrison later on. President 10 was John Tyler. There was one Tyler that played for City called Ernie Tyler. Basically what I'm learning here is I like going back into the past because we all have brilliantly English names.
It's a rule. By royal decree, you had to.
There's a lot of going back to the past going on.
He played 47 times for City in the 1920 season and 2021 season, winning 20 games. That's literally the only record I could find of him. Let's move to the Taylors though, number 12, because Zachary Taylor. There's quite a few Taylors that play for City, all and a lot of them within living memory. So we'll go. We'll get the ones that people won't know first off. Harry Taylor, striker, scored 28 in 101 games in the teens and 20s, 1910s and 1920s. Ken Taylor played one game for City in 1957-58. And then Taylor Richards, who is actually like very quite current. He was an unused sub once in 1819.
Remember that name? Yeah,
yeah. I knew you'd be there with Taylor Richards. Gareth Taylor, part of the Division Two playoff final winning team. Joey, when you think back to your City supporting life, how does the 99 playoff final sit with you as an overseas fan?
I mean, I have a signed Paul Dickov kit behind me.
Perfect.
Yeah. I have the signed Gillingham away.
Yeah, what was it? What was it like engaging with that game though? From that time,
this is what it was just this monster.
Yeah, it's what started me. I was like 10 or 11, and I just saw highlights on, I think it was ESPN. It was like on SportsCenter, and they never showed highlights here of any sport. But I was a little kid. I saw the highlights, and I was like, oh, that team looks cool.
This team that has limped out of the third tier, that's the team for me.
But I had no context. I just saw it was the 90s. I saw a highlighter color on a kit as a child, and I was like, nice, that's sick. And then I saw what happened, and I was like, oh, I'm going to like them. Mm. Well, then the internet happened, you know, and I was able to realize what I had signed up for, and I was like, okay, well, I guess as a Browns fan, this kind of tracks. Like, we're terrible. I'll just own it. And then I just stuck with it through everything after
through thin and thin. And then somehow,
I had to wait 9 years until we won the lottery, but, whatever. It was fine. It was fun. It was difficult following him, using dial up internet to pull up to like sites.
Why
to try
would
to
you
find
do that
scores.
To yourself? Yeah. Why would you do that to yourself?
Psycho, I don't know. In deep need of therapy.
It's pretty cool that I mean, for us, obviously that was a monumental event, but the dramatics of it, right? That it was so dramatic that it made it to American television. Do you know what I mean? Like that's
pretty especially
cool.
Back then.
Yeah.
There also, is Taylor Harwood Bellis, of course. So.
Yeah, I was gonna come to him because he played against City recently earlier this season for Southampton. Played 8 times for City. Scored against Port Vale in the cup. It was unfortunate for him, wasn't it, Mulf? Because he had a chance at City, but like in a Pep Guardiola team, centre backs are it's one impenetrable position.
Yeah. No, I think good player, and I mean, I'm not sure that we could rule out him returning at some point. I mean, Joey and I were talking about the age profile at the back there. And I know you've got Callum Doyle out on loan that is, you know, potential to return. But it's an aging defence. And we're going to be looking for some, I don't know, if there are Pep-trained defenders out there, I'm sure they're on the list at, you know, yeah somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about Robert Taylor? He played in the Division Two playoff final as well, but for Gillingham, scored against City. Then City went and bought him for reasons I still don't really understand.
They thought they were doing the John Mackin thing with him.
How did he get on?
Well, not great. He turned up, played. He played 16 times, scored 5 goals, and City ruined him. He officially retired in 2012, playing for Diss Town. He played for Wolves, QPR. He went back to Gillingham for a bit, Grimsby, Scunthorpe, like all these teams in the early noughties. After those goals he scored at City, he only scored twice more in the league in his entire career. City just ruined him.
I guess we were the. We're doing back then what United do to players these days. that's a graveyard.
That is City heritage, to be fair. Joey, I'm going to mention one more Taylor. The legend that is Stuart Taylor, goalkeeper, played once in 2010.
Yes. The less fun Richard Wright or Scott Carson.
You know?
No, if you did rank the third keepers, he's third below Carson and Wright for me.
Yeah. Talk to me, Mulv, about Stuart Pearce. Franklin Pearce, president number 14. Different spelling, but a homophone. So talk to me about Stuart Pearce.
Yeah, I was lucky enough back, I'm going to say 2007, to be at one of the home games during the Pearce era that we actually scored. Richard Dunn scored a header off a corner, I believe, against Middlesbrough, and we won 1-0. I remember furiously hugging a stranger next to me in the top tier, the Etihad. That was maybe the highlight of the Pearce era for me. I was over for a wedding. I was living in America by then, obviously, and came back and, lucky enough to go to that. I think it was on a Monday night. I remember it vividly, and a great result against Middlesbrough. Probably should have lost. I think they hit the post twice in the last 20 minutes. Middlesbrough did, but we escaped, so... Yeah, that's my lasting Stuart Pearce memory.
Yeah, there's no good things happening against Middlesbrough, though. So one game where we got something we didn't deserve out of it, maybe I'm not going to complain about. 16, Abraham Lincoln. He's one that's fairly well known across the world, Joey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's decent. He's done some good stuff.
Yeah. The only connection I've got with that is Lincoln City. City have 14 wins from 24 games against Lincoln. It does bring me, though, to the tricky situation of President 17 and 36, Andrew Johnson and Lyndon B. Johnson. There's one Johnson that we'll gloss over. There's others. David Johnson, striker, scored one goal in six games in 83-84. Jeff Johnson, Welsh midfielder, played nine times in the 70s. Nigel Johnson, defender, who played seven games in 85-86. Tommy Johnson, an absolute prolific. City hero. Yeah, prolific.
Elbow surgery.
Yeah, 355. Elbow surgery?
That's an American sports reference.
in American baseball, a lot of pitchers have Tommy John surgery.
Oh, right, I see. Because they do their elbows with the pitching, I guess. Yeah. So I don't know if he had knee surgery. Knee surgery would be the kind of football equivalent, wouldn't it? You kick it too much.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but anyway, he played 355 times, scored 166 goals, five hat-tricks in total across 11 seasons with City, won Division 2 in 1928 with the club. But the one I want to kind of focus on is Michael Johnson, Joey, who probably, mm-hmm. he didn't have the career at City that he probably should have done, really, did he?
No. Demons, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of off-the-field stuff and some injuries, but man, oh man, when he was fit and firing, what a player. Like, I think that was, when I was younger, I remember like that being like one of the first guys where I was like, oh, holy cow, we might have something here. Mm-hmm. Like, we might have created a monster here. But yeah, just couldn't, I don't know, just couldn't get everything together off the pitch, and it, you know, it just derailed everything on the pitch.
Yeah, he actually broke through, Mulv, in that Stuart Pearce era. That was kind of like one of the highlights of the end of that season.
Mm-hmm.
He was tremendous. His link up with Alano was incredible. And that they said about him at the time, Michael Johnson, that like time stopped when he was on the ball. It just made it look so easy. Incredible talent, and a shame that he didn't have a proper career.
Yeah, it is good in his post football career as well. I know a couple of people have interviewed him, And like the key thing about it is that he wasn't happy in football, and he is happy now. So that is that is at least the kind of blessing that comes from his retirement in the end.
Is he running a restaurant or something?
Yeah, he's had a couple of businesses. He's done a bar and a restaurant. I think he had an estate agency for a bit as well. So he's had a couple of hands in a couple of businesses. He's doing quite well for himself.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Get your ears around our bonus episodes every Monday. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Present 18 then, Ulysses S. Grant. There are 2 Grants that are on City's books or have been on City's books. Tony Grant is the one that I think most people will remember. Won 11 games with City in between 1999 and 2002, never scored for the club midfielder. But here's one for you. True Grant, the goalkeeping son of Lee Grant, was an unused sub last season. I couldn't tell you when, but I remember the story coming up.
Allegedly, he was an unused sub.
I've got a feeling it was a Champions League game, you know.
Could have been, yeah. When we just named maybe one that we were, maybe if it was like something in the group stage where we were already done.
Yeah.
For me, Tony Grant is a Championship manager name. Like, as Joey was saying earlier, it was really hard to follow City from the States, you know, in the late 90s. But I did play a lot of Championship manager as City, and he was definitely on that squad. So.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a genuinely forgettable City career. but, I mean, plenty on this list are the same. One who isn't, so there's another club legend coming up now. President 19 was Rutherford B. Hayes. I honestly don't know who that is. But Joe Hayes, midfielder, won the FA Cup for City in 1956, City's 5th ever highest scorer. 152 goals in 364 games, played 12 seasons. Rutherford B. Hayes, who is that?
He's the Tony Grant of American presidents.
He's a staunch abolitionist. He's from Ohio, shout out. He served in the Union Army.
When we say abolitionist, that means slavery, right? Is that right?
But
get rid of the
good side of it, yeah.
Yeah.
He was kicking out.
Down with slavery.
Yeah, he wanted to kick slavery out.
Love it.
Pretty. I don't know if he was a good president or not, but that's a good stance to have, I think.
Yeah, I'd say slightly before your time, given he left office in 1881. But
Mould might have seen him.
Yeah. We're going to skip President 20, but 21 was Chester A. Arthur. And it will not surprise you that all these Arthurs played for City really early in their history. Arthur Bacon, brilliant name. Striker with 1 goal in 5 games in the 1920s. Arthur Daniels, midfielder with 1 goal in 32 games, again in the 20s. Arthur Mann, defender that played 44 games in 3 seasons in the 60s and 70s. He won the FA Cup, the European Cup, Winners' Cup, and the League Cup with City. And then Arthur McCabe, who is a midfielder that played 1 game in 1895-96. But I think the interesting thing... The interesting thing with the Arthurs is 3 Arthurs played for Ardwick in the season, like right before City were formed. So they played in the 1893-94 season for Ardwick. Arthur Spittle, McDowell and Jones. And since then, like, Arthur Mann is the last Arthur to have played for City, and he left in 1971. I would like to see another one soon.
Let's go find an Arthur then. You know what I mean? Arthur the Arthur.
Most Arthurs these days are Brazilian, are they not?
Are they?
I don't know.
There's a lot of Brazilians turning up with like English names.
Oh, okay.
Old English names.
Old English names, yeah.
Maybe we'll see a Brazilian Reginald then. They'll just call him like Reginaldo.
I will sign him in an instant.
yes.
The next thing, it's interesting this, because obviously we're speaking after Donald Trump has won the election, and he's now simultaneously two different numbers on the list of presidents. That's happened before. 22 and 24 was both Grover Cleveland. And Joey, we're going to your hometown now, because this is the link here. And you can tell me it's tenuous all you want, but Paolo Wanchope, Alfie Haaland, and Nicky Weaver all had operations at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. It's literally one of the best hospitals on the planet. I think it's been ranked number two in the world for the last like 5 years. There's always like big athletes and celebrities and stuff that when they need big surgeries, they fly them into town.
Yeah.
And the main campus is right downtown, so it's easy for people to get to and have whatever surgeries they need. It's a thing that Cleveland's very proud of. It's just an incredible
very
medical
proud.
Facility. Yeah.
Are we talking like the exports from Cleveland are genuinely the Cleveland Clinic, and then second is Joey from Noisy Neighbors?
I mean, order might be switched, but yeah.
Excellent. Woodrow Wilson was number 28. Billy Wilson, Clive Wilson, Jock Wilson, and here's one, Josh Wilson Esbrand. Are the Wilsons that I've found who played for City. Clive Wilson, I think people have got a chance of
that's
having seen Mulv, yeah.
Yeah, so when I left England for the States back in 1985, Clive Wilson was, I think, at the peak of his City powers. And I even came back the next year to watch the Four Members Cup final, which he appeared in, I believe. He would later go, we played Chelsea, and I think he would later go to Chelsea. And play there as well. So yeah, Clive Wilson, absolutely. He was maybe, you know, for those that don't know, he was maybe, I don't know, kind of a Yaya Toure before the real one turned up. really good player, one of my favorites. It does bring back some sad memories though, because there was a lot of mid-80s. There was a lot of racism. Mm. In the stands, and I do remember some awful scenes from the Four Members Cup final. Whenever he was on the ball, I was unfortunately sat in the Chelsea section because I got tickets through my dad's mate who was a Chelsea fan, and dark times.
Yeah, and Josh Wilson Esbrand. Three appearances for City, never in the league, Joey. Two in the Champions League, one in the League Cup.
Yeah, and a bunch in preseason.
Yeah, did you? I mean, was he on the tours when they've come to America? Yeah. Have you seen him? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Oh man, he. I think every time I've seen him, it's a real struggle.
Do you know, the first time he came over, he and Rico came over together, and he actually performed better than Rico.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then
after that, though,
Rico passed him.
Yeah. 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 I always thought he was going to be something, and then I don't know, in the last year or two, it seems like he would get, I mean, there was a game, was it early this season?
Yes.
Where he just got absolutely roasted for,
I think, was it the game in Florida?
Might have been.
I feel like he got roasted.
Or he got just turned inside out three or four times during the match, and it was like, oh boy, Josh, this might be it, pal. This might be the end.
And that brings us to President 35, John F. Kennedy. You're both in Dallas, which is obviously where Kennedy was shot. Two actually like real good Kennedys for City. Bobby Kennedy, defender, played 254 times across 8 seasons.
John's brother won
Division Two and Division One titles with City. And then Mark Kennedy, winger in the promotion in 2000 and relegation in 2001 season, scored genuinely the goal that still to this day makes me cry more than any other, and that was the third against Blackburn. Could you consume that over there? Was that, what was that like, that final day in 2000?
No,
No.
No access to that.
No shot. No.
No, all our stuff outside of the highlight that we saw on ESPN, that Joey saw, that made him a Man City fan, all our stuff on Gillingham 99 that season comes from you, Moons.
Oh, excellent.
You're the expert, aren't you?
I don't like to blow my own trumpet, but there is a book that people can buy on the 99 playoff if they want to.
Was it Looks Like Scunny Next Season?
Something like that, yeah. Let's swiftly move on then. 37, Richard Nixon. He had a quiet term, as far as I can tell, Joey. Nothing, not too much noise around Nixon.
Nah, pretty chill. Yeah. Definitely nothing that just sticks with the American government forever. And no terms, you know, were coined that have then been bastardized into other things that are, you know, criminal acts and all that. He's pretty...
Yeah,
he wasn't a crook.
The reason I bring it up is Eric Nixon played goalkeeper for City in the 80s. Mulf, you must have seen him play.
I did. He was knocking about the first. I don't think he always was the number one when I was about at Main Road, but definitely remember that name. And when you proposed this conversation between us, I immediately wrote his name down as a link between the presidents. So,
38 was Gerald Ford. Albert Ford is the only link there. Midfielder, played four times in the 20s. And then we're going to finish with Jimmy Carter, president number 39. He's the most recent president that I can find any sort of City link with, until one of you two comes up with a brilliant Trump pun. But Steve Carter played eight times for City, scoring twice in two seasons in the 70s. And then, obviously, the big connection here is Adam Carter, who runs statcity.co.uk quite often on the Blue Moon podcast. There we go.
Well, I've got a more current one for you.
Oh, God, go on.
Because that new one doesn't start for a while.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember the Brazilian, Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's Frank Lampard, Delano Roosevelt.
No, not having that one.
No, that's a bit of a reach.
Here's one for you, Moons. Dwight Ike Immel Eisenhower.
Oh, yeah, it's a bit ham-fisted, but yeah.
Yeah.
We're nearly there.
we really let ourselves down here, you know? We should have gotten more Frank Lampard Roosevelt.
I can only come up with silly ones.
Go on, have you got any more silly ones to finish, Mulf?
No, unfortunately, just
he blew his wad already.
My best result lately was a clean colonoscopy.
Swag.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, and we're very sorry about that.
That was Joey and Mulf talking to me about City connections with the US president. Go and check out the Noisy Neighbours podcast. It's always a good laugh. It's time for the listener questions here, though. Casey, give us a number. Which one of Higgy's jingles are we going to have to kick us off?
How many have I got to choose from?
One or two. He's done two that I've got on file.
All right, I was going to say I've heard two, but the way that you were saying pick a number there, it was going
to
go like.
I thought it was up to like eight or nine then.
Yeah, he's never actually he's done them, but never recorded them for me.
Mm. Oh, I think he's done a couple for me on the concourse.
Yeah,
I'll just go number two.
Number two. Okay, here we go.
The listeners' questions. The listeners' questions. The listeners' questions. The listeners' questions. So it's the listeners' questions bit. Please make sure that yours ain't shit, because Mooney won't put up with it. Yes, it's the listeners' questions. The listeners' questions, the listeners' questions. Thank you.
No, thank you, Higgy. Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast is the way to get in touch. You can email through the website as well, bluemoonpodcast.com. Darren got in touch on Twitter to say, after some poor performances lately, including matches we've won, such as Fulham and Southampton, do you think it's time for the chairman to force Pep's hand as to whether he's going to stay or not, so the club can start planning either way? Jack, what do you think?
Well, can I just say before we start, there's very, very few men that make me smile in the way that Higgy does.
He's one of a kind, isn't he? In a good way.
He's just like sort of like I was like bobbing along to that, just like willing him on. in a way that you go, is he going to fuck this up? Obviously, he's not going to fuck it up because
it's recorded it, yeah.
And you put it on, so it's obviously going to be fine. But it's always like, felt like it was just on the cusp of disaster. And, but it was brilliant.
What a fitting metaphor.
Yeah, yeah. I think my personal thoughts on Pep are that they need to know. Everyone needs to know and that needs clarity. Now, I've asked him a few times about this. First one was in the summer. And I said to him, you know, is it difficult to know when to say I'm staying or I'm going? Because look at what happened with Jurgen Klopp last year. And he sort of avoided it and said, well, I've never said that I'm going. I said, yeah, but like, either way, like, people will want to know, like, because at the moment nobody knows. And I talked to a couple of people that sort of around him this week, and it's still very much like, his head's in the game. He wants to sort of solve what's going on the pitch and isn't talking about anything else at the moment. And it's like, well,
they can't get to April and find out that he's leaving, though. Yeah.
Well, this is it. I mean, but, you know, we're of the mind that he'll make his mind up this month because that's what he did with the last two. But things change, don't they? I mean, I still expect him to this month because history tells us that he will. But maybe it'll be different, and maybe this will sort of lurch on a little bit. I don't know. Yeah. It's strange that everybody I talk to saying we don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, it just like, obviously, like, you know, I know nowhere near as much as you, Jack. But it's just like, you know, when you're just trying to like pick up off clues, like, because obviously, you know, the charges thing that's ongoing, you think, you know, maybe he's waiting for that to be resolved. But then when Viana came in as technical director, you're thinking, oh well, maybe they're prepping for, you know, the next, you know, regime coming in. And then you just end up doing your own head in thinking, I'm trying to read it too much into it. So I've just been trying to forget about it. And I'm sure the players are probably the same, aren't they?
Hmm. Yeah, my sort of view on it is that if he was to stay, and let's not forget that live podcast we did at the end of last season, Mooney, we were talking about his future after the story had done that he's expected to go.
Yeah.
He had one foot out the door. Like, it was like, next season is it. Literally everybody around him was like, yeah, that'll be it. And sort of what happens with him is that he sort of arrived back at pre-season and it's like he's had another hit of the drug. And it's like, oh God. And I find that sort of fascinating in a way. But I also think if he's gonna stay, he needs to stay for longer than a year.
Well, I was gonna say this because, like, if he signs a 1 year extension, all we're doing is kicking this can down the road for one more year.
But it's not only that; it's like they are gonna have to sign some players next summer. Like, there's gonna have to be a little bit of a what he says, shake and move in the squad, doesn't he? Like, they are gonna have to do a heavy bit of business next year. Now, I know that they're sort of seamless in the way that they want to play, so the next guy is going to play in a very similar way to Pep. But I don't know whether having Pep managing those players for a year and then someone else coming in is majorly beneficial. So you'd really want Pep to have a good 2 years with them,
yeah,
instead of just the one. But then that would sound perfectly reasonable at any other football club. And I put this to someone the other day, who was like, he needs to be there 2 years or none, sort of thing. And they said, well, yeah, but you're talking crap because it's Pep, so who cares? You get any, as long as you possibly can get out of him, you'll get that. And I also sort of agree with that as well, you know what I mean? It's tricky.
Well, that's the other. It's like you've got that. This is what I'm like. You just end up flip flopping all over the place as well. Because it's like just when you said there about the hit, I just immediately thought, well, he's not even going to get a break with that Club World Cup to experience the break to then get the hit back, is he, next season if he does sign on for another year?
And I mean, the other thing about the Club World Cup is a lot of my colleagues, we obviously talk about this sort of thing quite a lot, and there's a lot of people saying, well, he wouldn't leave him in the lurch because of the Club World Cup, would he? And it's like, well, no, we don't think he would, because that club, if they get to the final of the Club World Cup, they're going to have 3 weeks, four weeks tops before the start of the season. So the new manager is going to have a week with the players. And you go, well, no, logically, he wouldn't leave him in the lurch because of everything they've given to him and things like that. But it's like, well, maybe he would. Like, we did, you literally don't know, do you? And it, like, who's to say that? And I know we spoke about this in the summer, Mooney, on that podcast, but maybe they get someone who is close enough to Pep, who maybe he already knows, that can also go to the Club World Cup, be around it, be around the players, and it's sort of a hybrid coaching sort of
the old thing. Roy Evans, Gerard Houllier role.
Yeah. Without the knives.
Yeah. The other side of this, Casey, is that we don't know how he will respond to the demands of League One. So.
Oh yeah, but you'd love him in League One, wouldn't you? I know, obviously, people get very down about the thought of relegation, but there is something in the back of my mind that's just sadistic that I just really enjoy it.
Yeah, where he's saying, Doncaster guys, wow.
But even with the charging, I know there's been quite a lot sort of said about he's waiting to see what happens with the charges. You know, if you take him at face value, if they were to get relegated, which we don't think they will, but if they were, if you take him at face value, he's more likely to stay.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
The man's an enigma, that's what he is. Try and work him out at your peril, that's
it. Yeah, an enigma wrapped up in a conundrum.
Yeah, exactly. Right, well, I don't think we've solved any problems or got any solutions, but I hope it's
made anyone happier.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I hope it's been an enjoyable ride, but there we are. That's it for this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you for making it all the way through after those two games this week, if you have made it all the way to this point. Thanks also to my guests, Jack Gaunt.
Thank you very much, mate. That was good.
And Casey.
Loved it. Cheers.
There is a clip of this week's Nostalgia Show on the way. That was Kieran Murray and Niall Taylor picking their top 10 headed goals of recent times. You can get the full thing on our Patreon. Take a look at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast for details. I'll be back after whatever happens at Brighton. Brace yourselves.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Did Sean go to head that ball against Leicester?
Yes, he did, and I will die on that hill.
Because my memory very much says that Mark Kennedy put a cross in, Tim Flowers punched it onto Sean Gota's back.
I reckon he headed it, and I think that Sean Gota scoring with a different body part to what is officially classed as that body part for that goal is not uncommon. So I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here when I think Sean Gota bullet-headed that ball with the back of his head at Filbert Street.
Excellent. Okay, so that one apparently does count. Kieran, does using your shoulder at Old Trafford count as a header?
I've gone for what I first thought when I saw the goal that happened. So with the evidence of my eyes very quickly, I've gone for, yes, that was a header. when you watch the replays in a slower mode, maybe not. But I don't think there'll be room to get top 10 shoulder goals in. This had to go in. The header was certainly the intention, and it looked to begin with. The shoulder's near the head, so yes.
The shoulder is near the head, so yes. Excellent. Right, okay, so that's the definition we're going with here.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin.
Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.